Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. August was another banner month for the Central Ohio real estate market. Realtor.com ranked it the seventh in the nation for the length of time that properties are on the market before they sell. That makes this a good place to sell and a very tough place to buy. There aren't enough houses to go around. We're talking real estate today. Joining us, real estate analyst for Vogt Strategic Insights, Rob Vogt. Welcome back.
Good morning, Ann.
Also, president of Helpbringer Mortgage Services, Todd Helpbringer. Welcome back.
Good morning, Ann. Thank you.
Central Ohio, seventh in the nation. Does this mean that those subdivisions filled with empty houses from the foreclosure crisis are no more? Have those gone away? Are they selling?
I definitely think there's fewer homes on the foreclosure side, but that was going to happen no matter what. Because with the lending changing so much, that I think they weren't doing that silly financing anymore, so people aren't going to be foreclosed on as much.
Okay.
So that's gone away by the wayside for sure.
And so people have been buying up those houses
now? Correct. And on all price points, even the low price point, you'll have investors go in there and put money in there and fix the property up and then turn into a rental property.
Or flip it
if they want. Yeah. But a lot of them are kicking and seeing the advantage of buying these homes sometimes under $50,000
uh-huh.
and maybe an $80,000 neighborhood and then maybe get an $800 a month rent.
I think one of the nice things, Todd, that the investors like is the idea of buying a new house that absolutely needs no work.
Right.
And that's an easy rental to make. There's still a lot of families that are out there today who are struggling that can't meet the lending requirements. Mm-hmm. So to get into a nice neighborhood in a brand new house for a rental rate, it certainly makes it very appealing. In fact, one of the things we're finding in the market research that we do for the apartment market is that a lot of the three-bedroom market has been absorbed by these single-family rentals. So we don't see as many three-bedroom units coming online as we did a dozen years ago. So you're absolutely right that we're seeing a lot of investors going in and buying these three- and four-bedroom houses and putting them out into the rental market.
Mm-hmm.
Which is one of the reasons we're seeing a tighter market in terms of choices, that a lot of these have been scooped up. They're not for sale anymore, and it's tough to find a house available in a market where a lot of investors have bought up that housing.
Why isn't this affecting builders then? Why aren't they building more?
That's what
They're building big houses. I keep seeing gigantic houses out there. But
Rob and I were just talking about that. And going back to some earlier conversations, I've always thought that the 6,000 square foot house, the 5,000 are by the wayside. People want smaller homes and a more livable lifestyle. And we talked earlier that market is so soft. I would say soft above 750, meaning there's a lot of product on the market and there's no buyers. Why are they building at that price point? Because there is still a huge demand. Our price point is probably 500,000 and less is lightning fast right now. Meaning if it's priced properly, you have 10 offers in 2 days. Above that, super soft. We may only have maybe 4 or 5 of those what they call super jumbo homes going on right now. Just not much activity.
Yeah, they'll rock my world when they finally do a parade of homes that's in the 2,500 square foot range.
Right.
That's right.
I mean, rock it.
Yeah, I think one of the issues that we see also, Ann, is it's difficult for the mass production builders to find a site that's close to the core anymore.
It's running out,
If you look at the example of Minerva Park that MI Homes was doing up there, they had to buy a golf course to get something within I-270. And this is just a reflection of what we're finding about from consumers, that they don't want to live 25 minutes from the outer belt because that's not close to the things that they want. And I think builders recognize that, and I think that they are running into a softer market for those subdivisions that are out in the far reaches of Hilliard, Pickerington, Gahanna. Those are places that aren't quite as desirable, which is why we see these inner city neighborhoods like Grandview and Arlington and Bexley red hot. People want to live close to the core.
Even though Upper Arlington's, I just read, most expensive neighborhood in the country, mm-hmm. Square footage wise, that's amazing. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the real estate market in Central Ohio. Hopping as usual. Makes me kind of crack up when I think back to the days when we first started talking back in 2009 with the two of you about just people struggling to, clawing their way out of being underwater, what to do, all the kinds of things we talked about. Strangely, just seven years ago, have completely flip-flopped. My guests, Rob Vogt, real estate analyst at Vogt Strategic Insights, and also Todd Helpbringer, president at Helpbringer Mortgage Services. Have a question or comment, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Rob Vogt, according to Realtor.com, the Columbus zip code 43214, Clintonville, is the 23rd hottest zip code in the country right now. I think it's the only one from Ohio that even made that particular ranking. And the that National Association of Realtors says that millennials are the key factor there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it just reflects what I said earlier, is that folks are looking for a unique neighborhood close to the center city. The only thing that holds back a place like Clintonville is probably the school district, the fact that it's in Columbus City Schools. But millennials are definitely driving a lot of that decision to buy in that neighborhood. That's one of the big questions we're getting as analysts on: when is this additional surge amongst millennials going to leave rental housing? And when they make that decision to move from rental housing into single family homes, to buy a single family homes, the market is really going to explode.
But Clintonville's not cheap, and millennials are struggling with income, student loan debt. I mean, they've got a lot of issues that maybe the baby boomers didn't have 25 years ago.
Well, you just gave the reasons why they're not buying single family houses in large numbers. But think about it in terms of the number of units that come up for sale in Clintonville is not a big number.
Right.
It's not like we need, 5,000 millennial households to go in and buy a house in Clintonville. So, we're just beginning to see a microcosm of what the potential might be there several years down the road as millennials make this decision to finally buy a house.
And where will they go? Because they're all going to want those communities that are so walkable.
Well, that's the challenge, Todd.
Right.
That is absolutely the challenge.
But there are a lot of walkable communities that are still sort of struggling. They're not quite at that nice price point. The stock is kind of run down.
Right.
Do you see those, 20 years from now?
I do.
A lot more turnaround?
I really do. I think there's a fine line between the quality of the housing that it may be that really needs some significant improvement or even modest improvements to it, and the neighborhood that it's located in. I think we're going to see more and more younger families make that transition into inner city neighborhoods that they may not have looked at even 5 years ago. I think West Franklinton, as an example, west of State Route 315, mm-hmm. represents a neighborhood that is going to come back. The south end of Columbus, Parsons Avenue right now, a really hot market, Marion Village, Schumacher Place. Right. These are all neighborhoods. 10 years ago, nobody was even talking about.
Marion Village they were talking about, but over by Parsons, you got Crest Gastropub going in there. I mean, that says it all right there.
Just going to take time for these people to go back and revitalize those neighborhoods.
Right.
It's this turnover.
So what's it like from the mortgage standpoint, though, when you're talking about some of these sketchy neighborhoods getting in there? How does that affect your decision to loan money?
Well, I mean, we'll loan money as long as the client qualifies.
So you're not looking at the property has to be worth what they
say
it's worth.
Yeah, gotcha. So if they go into contract for $200,000, we have to basically verify the value is there, and then the client qualifies. That's not a problem. And we're not having a big problem in those areas to get the comparables. The things we're having problems in is the comparables in the super red hot markets, where the house was on the market today has 10 offers and they're bidding it up. $5,000 and $10,000. We've had some appraisals where they're missing values because the market's not supporting that yet. And so then they go back to the drawing board and either renegotiate with the seller, or the buyer just puts up another $5,000 or $10,000 because they really truly want to be in that neighborhood. So it's a hot market. I don't think it's a bubble market. It hasn't lasted long enough.
Uh-huh.
I don't think we want to see home values going up 10%. 10%, that's going to be a problem.
But a nice 4-6% clip.
There's nothing wrong with that. I think if we still go in these 10% clips, it's going to price so many people out of the market. And I think all neighborhoods, going back to your earlier comment, sometimes we just need to revitalize them. They've been beat down so long, get some new blood in there, get things fixed up, and they'll all come back. Same with we've talked down 161. That whole area, there's new restaurants down there. That'll happen too.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Give us a call, questions or comments. John in East Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, John.
Yes, I have a question. I've been living on the east side in Columbus since the 70s and been active in community organizations. And I've noticed older neighborhoods like mine, suddenly homes that were residential are turned into rentals. This, of course, adversely affects the value of the other homes and is a deteriorating factor. And I guess what I'm trying to find out is, legally, how can this be done without conferring with the neighborhood that's affected adversely by this. I realize there's some type of backroom arrangement that this is done in, because you never find out about it until it's happened.
Well, even in neighborhoods where, like, say, a Brookside Estates, where they do have a neighborhood association, that kind of a thing, do they have any legal standing when people start converting to rentals?
They don't, unless it's in the bylaws that they want to keep so many. But I've not seen a bylaw in a single-family neighborhood where they're saying you can only have so many renters. Now, I've seen that in apartment complex.
And condos and that kind of thing, yeah.
But not in a single family. I mean, unfortunately, you know, John, that...
Yeah, and I think the key to it is code enforcement. That is really where you have to make sure that the city inspectors are aware of these units, because they really can't deteriorate to the point where it becomes a detriment to the neighborhood. And if it's got peeling paint falling off gutters and grass that hasn't been cut, get on code enforcement and get them out there and hit it quickly. I mean, you just can't allow these houses to build up in a neighborhood, rentals that are all of a sudden deteriorate to the point where they're a real problem. Right. So code enforcement is the direction I would recommend.
Okay. John, thanks for that call. How is the stronger job market driving household growth? Is that something that's palpable with what you're doing?
Yeah. We were talking about that earlier today. We have an influx of people moving from out of state to Columbus right now.
Right.
I mean, I think for the affordability factor, and there's great job opportunities here. We've got quite a few clients that are moving from the West Coast to here. And even on our investment side, a lot of investors coming from New York buying in Columbus and California buying in Columbus. They're finding great value here versus where they are currently. So I think the job market is speaking volumes of why our values are going up right now.
Yeah, that whole affordability issue, I thought it was curious. I was looking at a report that Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Pittsburgh are the least expensive big cities in which to buy a home. And that's from a new study by the mortgage service company HSH. You know, it was reported by the Dispatch. I wasn't able to find the actual study, but the Dispatch said that Columbus wasn't included in it. And I was wondering, who looks at those statistics? Is it like, is that something investors look at when they look at affordability, or what?
I think there's a lot of folks who issue that kind of information just because they get a good read on it. Obviously, put things on the internet, they want to have good things to read about. But I think it points to a lot of important advantages that Central Ohio offers, that it does have a market similar to Cleveland, Pittsburgh, and Cincinnati, frankly, quite a bit stronger in terms of job growth. So it does make it more desirable, and you can attract households from outside the area and be able to advertise the fact that you can get a house for 70% of what you owned in the state of Washington. Right. I mean, we just have some really affordable places to live, comparatively speaking, to the coast in comparison. But the job growth, I think, is a good point, Ann, that we are experiencing household growth rates exceeding what we were expecting over the past 3 or 4 years. So we have this big influx of new households, both renters and homeowners. And a lot of those are moderately priced, moderately incomed households. So it's, you know, we were also talking about the fact you're not seeing a lot of millionaires moving to Central Ohio who can absorb these million-dollar houses. These folks want a $250,000 to $400,000 house, and that's why that piece of the market has heated up to the way it has.
When they're coming from the coast, though, if they were a homeowner on either coast, they had a lot more money invested per square foot. Absolutely. And they come here. I mean, are they just being able to put down
huge amounts? Yeah,
huge amounts.
I've had a couple clients that have paid cash for the house and then come back to me to get financing for a permanent, so they get some of their money back. But they also put cash down for another reason. A, I want to get this house, no questions asked, I'm going to pay cash.
Yeah, okay.
So I just beat everybody else out on the offers. But yeah, the price point out there per square foot versus here, they're getting so much more house.
Yeah, and once they sell out there, they can come here with a big pile of cash.
Right. They don't have to buy it. They're just buying snowblower, salt, shovel.
Yeah, right. So what?
Right.
No sympathy for me. We're talking about the real estate market in Central Ohio. You just heard from Todd Helpbringer. He's president at Helpbringer Mortgage Services, and also with us, Rob Vogt, real estate analyst at Vogt Strategic Insights. If you have a question, comment, want to join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking Central Ohio real estate this hour. You know, just 7 years ago, it was bleak, bleak, bleak. Now things are looking up and have been for quite some time. Still with us, real estate analyst for Vogt Strategic Insights, Rob Vogt, and also president of Helpbringer Mortgage Services, Todd Helpbringer. You have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Oh my gosh, the mortgage interest rates are so stinking low still. I can't believe it. How many years has this been going on?
Forever and ever. So I've been in the business since the late 80s, and that's when they've come down. They've been consistently low ever since then.
I remember when you felt like you were doing good if you could do 6 or 7%. I'm dating myself.
No, but it's always fun that when I have a client, the younger client, that if the rate happened to be 4%, oh, that's so high.
Do you wash their mouth out with soap or something?
Exactly. Make them stay on the corner. But rates right now, the 30-year fixed, again, everyone wants the rates to go up. You talk about the Fed, they want the rates to go up. Everyone wants the rates to go up. But the 10-year bond market that controls rates has done nothing but go up and then go down further. Mm-hmm. And right now we're at low historic yields again. We're at the 30-year fix is down to 3 3/8.
Yeah, that's and 15-year fix, I've got 2.91.
Yeah, 2 3/4, but yeah, okay. It's in that general range.
Yeah.
So rates are fantastic. Absolutely.
So there's no excuse there. That's not what's stopping people.
No. I mean, again, I think the market is very brisk right now. We're very busy with purchases. Wish there was more product on the market, but that goes back to my point where I don't think we'll get into a bubble because there's not enough product out there that will push these 10% rate increases up for very long.
So. Tom, do you get involved with the product in price between 80 and 120,000?
A little bit. I mean, not a whole bunch.
What do you mean by?
Like purchase prices?
Purchase price, yeah.
Sometimes for condos, we get into that. Mm-hmm. Single families, not very often. Mm-hmm. I think our average is probably purchase price is probably 250 to 300. Okay.
Are there mortgage companies that specialize specifically at that price point? The reason I bring it up is, I talk about the some of the inner city neighborhoods that haven't quite experienced the success of Victorian Village or German Village. There's a lot of that product out there, the 80 to 120,000. Mm-hmm. It really kind of is languishing. And we talked about the fact it needs some improvement, some updating. It might be in a neighborhood that's got a lot of crime.
Is that going to be a demand thing where people are, the millennials will start to age, they'll get their jobs and...
Yeah, I think, back to your point, we'll do loans in the 80 to 120. We're just not getting a lot of influx of that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that clientele is, my company doesn't do FHA. If they're going FHA, they may be.
Okay. First time home buyers.
Yeah. I mean, conventional, which we do, has a product that does the 3% down, which is similar to FHA, but if they have a lower credit score, not knowing what their circumstances are. But back to your comment, Will they fix up the houses and things like that, you mean?
Or? Well, they're aging. I mean, we already know it's the greatest voting block is the millennials. Mm-hmm. It's still not the biggest block in buying. I mean, they've got to age a little bit and get that job and that kind of a thing, get the down payments. I mean, do you see some kind of push coming up in five or 10 years?
Well, that's the big question, Ann, right now, is when is that going to happen?
Yeah.
We hear about millennials now going back to live at home. Right. After college, they need that seasoning period, I guess. It's a new phenomena that's beginning to occur, and this is delaying that final decision to buy into a single family home. And the delayed marriages, and as you pointed out earlier, the increasing debt that a lot of millennials have is delaying their decision to move into it. So, and the question becomes, do they even actually accept the idea of owning a home?
Well, exactly.
Could it be that this is going to be a fundamental change to our society where renting is an acceptable alternative for the rest of your life?
Todd's like covering his ears going, yeah.
Well, I don't know. I still think of the clients that I talk to, they loved owning a home. And again, that's not all clients. It's like not every client wants to drive a Chevy. You know what I mean? There's a point for each person has a different taste, but I mean, we have a ton of people that just want to buy that house. But I do think it's that shift of at what age will they get into home ownership?
Yeah, but I think that millennials, for example, I don't see a lot of millennials painting their house or cleaning out gutters.
Some of them are still
baby
handy.
Boomers. Some are. Yeah. But we try to apply these to the entire spectrum of everybody's population, but I think that there's a lot of those folks out there that don't like the idea.
The values are changing.
Yeah.
Better or worse.
They'd rather
spend
their time going to a restaurant than us baby boomers cleaning out the...
I 100% agree with you there. I 100% agree that my stepson's 25 And he doesn't want to do no homeownership at all. Just rents and does his thing.
Is he in the basement?
Hassle-free.
No, he's a rock star. He lives out in Boulder.
So. Katie in Clintonville, you're a millennial and you're on the air. Hi, Katie.
Hi. Yes, I am a millennial, I think. I'm 25.
Yep, yeah, you are.
I thought it was interesting earlier when you were talking about millennials in Clintonville. I actually grew up in Clintonville. I love the area. My husband and I have been renting just south of Clintonville, and we're finally in a place where we're sick of renting, but we can't afford an entire house by ourselves in Clintonville.
Right.
So what we're actually doing is my mom is divorced. We're going to build a mother-in-law suite, and all three of us are going to live in this house, so we get to stay in the neighborhood. But I just think it's interesting because all of my friends and like neighbors that are my age, I don't know anyone who's staying in the neighborhood. I have one friend who just bought a house in like Nelsonville. But yeah, I mean, I don't know a ton of millennials that are really buying houses right now. And I thought it was interesting too when you're talking about whether we want to clean the gutters. I want to do some of that stuff. But my husband, he's, I think, Generation X probably. He is specifically wants to put everything under budget so that we can afford to hire landscapers. So we love the idea of a home owning, but some of that stuff we'd rather have a slightly smaller home and then hire some of that stuff out.
You're classic, Katie.
Yeah.
Well, one of the interesting things that she just said, which is an emerging trend, is the co-sharing, house co-sharing. Yeah. We're going to see more and more of that over time. As you know, these different generations come together in order to afford a place where they really want to live. Mm-hmm. The other piece of co-sharing that's going to exist is all these big houses out in the suburb that are 4,000 or 5,000 square feet that are going to be hard to find a buyer for
them.
Is it
Golden Girls time?
Yeah, I think it is.
Oh, yeah.
I think
yeah,
it is.
Good point. I thought about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Katie, thanks a lot, and good luck with that. That's really interesting.
It's also interesting that I agree with Katie that why not make the single family home act like a condo?
Yeah.
Sure. Hire the stuff done that you want to do.
If you can get somebody to show up.
Yeah.
That's wrong.
Good point. Good luck with that, Katie. Let's see. Turn to Ed in Baltimore has some questions about the South Side. Hi, Ed. You're on the air.
Hello. I appreciate this program because I get a lot more information from your two guests than I do from reading the paper over the course of time, because they put some nuance into what's going on in the real estate market. But I grew up in the Near East, South Side, and carried mail in German Village and Schumacher Place, Marion Village, for years. And I was wondering, even though those areas have just, German Village especially, but Schumacher Place and Marion Village has started to pop in the last few years, what the effect of the closing of the Columbus Castings plant and the fact that that's not going to be something they can redevelop in just a year or two is going to have on the market for those people that are already in a low-income area there in the far South Side and how that'll affect the housing market. And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thanks a lot, Ed. That's a good question. I mean, what do shutdowns like that, how do they affect, you know, that being that it's a brownfield and it'll have to be redeveloped very carefully.
Well, I think it's the younger households that have a little bit more income that are driving some of the revitalization in Marion Village and Schumacher Place and certainly German Village and the South Side. It doesn't help those immediate neighborhoods around that facility. It's going to be a big detriment, and it's going to take a number of years for it to come back. But, you know, we're seeing fewer and fewer manufacturing jobs in Central Ohio, and as the manufacturing jobs are being replaced by other jobs, and unfortunately Walmart-type jobs, affordability becomes a bigger and bigger issue. So, you know, it's unfortunate that that facility closed with the kind of wages that those workers were earning. And it is going to have a negative effect on the immediate neighborhood. But in terms of the long-term revitalization opportunity in those neighborhoods, again, the ones closest to downtown, I don't think it's going to affect it at this point.
Well, I think you can look at what's happening in Italian Village now. I mean, a lot of people poo-pooed that for a long time, the Jeffrey Place development. And now it looks like it's exploding out there.
It really is.
And people thought it couldn't happen.
Right.
But
right.
Just up and down High Street, too, like in, where the Gallery Hop is. I mean, they're putting up high-rises and all that.
Oh, I know.
Isn't that
up
crazy?
In Clintonville as well, all the way up.
Right.
It's just a new day. Let's see. This is a good question from Mark in Clintonville. I'm interested in this. How you doing, Mark? You're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
There's so many questions I could ask, but I'm really curious what you and your panelists think about how the new COTA bus rapid transit along Cleveland Avenue is going to affect those neighborhoods, because it seems like millennials don't just want walkability, but they want accessibility, bikeability, useful mass transit. And that could change things in that area a whole lot.
What do you think? I mean, Rob Vogt?
I think it's going to be execution. I would agree with the caller that type of rapid transit system could have a huge impact on those neighborhoods. That could really be a game changer. It's going to be execution, though. You know, we still see millennials sort of reluctantly getting on COTA buses and trying to figure out when the bus is going
to
be here.
That's a complaint repeatedly about Columbus.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's why I think the execution of that plan and how it happens. Now, if they execute it properly, yeah, I think it can be a huge stimulus to that neighborhood and could contribute to its rapid revitalization. But let's wait to see how they execute it.
Okay, Mark, thanks a lot for that call. It's all in the execution, as with so many other things. Kate in Delaware, you're on the air. Hi, Kate.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay. I live in Delaware, obviously, and I have been watching over the last 10 years as Columbus slowly marches our way, and I'm wondering, is that good for our home values or bad or indifferent? How does that work out for us?
I think that's great for your home values. They're adding all that, you know, new infrastructure up there and houses. I mean, everything seems to go from the nucleus on out. You know, they did the East and they did the Polaris and now on up into Delaware. I mean, I think it's going to be fantastic for your home values.
Unless you have to drive Route 23 every day.
but that's gotten a lot better at 270. I drove from Delaware.
I come down there every day.
Yeah, and it was, I mean, it never failed. There was, you know, the day of a blizzard, there's a semi overturned trying to come off 270 onto 23 and that kind of thing. It's going to be so much smoother. I think it's huge. But that commute's a bear.
My office is in Worthington. I live in Powell. I go up under that in that tunnel. I could be home in 15 minutes. But I think
Have you noticed a difference?
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Yeah.
I think to your point, though, now the bottleneck seems to be further up 23 on into Delaware.
Yeah.
That's where they're going to have to do something with.
The 33,
just
36.
Just on 23.
Yeah.
Just going north past Powell Road.
And that therein lies the eternal question of what to do about 23. They've been talking about it for 30 years, and they've never done anything. So there's nothing you can do once that development gets so ingrained.
Right.
I think the other thing that's going to enhance Delaware housing values is all the things that are going on 36 and 71. You know, the new outlet mall,
and I
see that entire stretch between I-71 and Delaware develop rather rapidly over time, and they're actually in probably a better position infrastructure wise. The ability to go on a limited access freeway and design some limited access points along that route that's going to make that a more desirable place to be.
For people who want to live that far out from the center city.
Right.
Kate, thanks a lot for that call. Bonnie in North Linden, you're on the air. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to, can you hear me okay?
I can, but could you pull the phone a little bit away from your mouth? There's a lot of static.
Okay, just a minute.
Are you there?
I think we
lost
too
Bonnie.
Far.
Bonnie, you're too far away now. Call us back. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Chris in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Chris.
Hi there. How you guys doing?
Good, thanks.
Great. I got a question for you guys. My wife and I own a home in Clintonville, a 1,200 square foot Cape Cod, and we have two boys under five, so the house is getting a little small. We were thinking about selling and getting a lot larger house for the same amount of money or less a little farther out. However, I'm a contractor. I was thinking about adding on, putting on a addition. I want to know if you guys had an opinion one way or the other.
I think with Clintonville, that's what a lot of people end up doing there. You'll do well. I think either way you go, if you put your house in the market and it's priced properly, you're going to get multiple offers right away. But if you love where you live and you're a contractor and you probably can do it economically, do it yourself. Why not?
I couldn't agree more, Todd. Yeah. That summarizes it.
Right.
Yep. Can't go wrong. Money in the bank. Chris in Clintonville, thanks a lot. Three kids, wow. Cody in Northwest Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Cody.
Hi. I just wanted to comment. My partner and I actually just moved from Clintonville earlier this summer. We found out as we were hunting, I mean, it was a nightmare to try to find something. You have everybody making multiple offers, you know, at 8:05 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And we ended up getting literally triple the house for the same mortgage payment. And we're only 4 miles west. And I was so worried about being far from everything. And I really only feel like there's like maybe 5 extra minutes to the airport compared to where we were before, just the way traffic is now in Clintonville. So people who are looking to sell, it's kind of worth it to expand where you're looking.
Yeah, good point. I mean, yeah, just driving a little bit further is not that big of a deal. I tend to agree with that, too. Rob and I talked earlier about that today, that, I mean...
But you live in Powell and I live in the short north, so we do differ in
if
our...
If I had stayed in Clintonville from 1991, I'd be rich. My house would be paid off. I'd be well-to-do. Cody, thanks a lot, though. That's a good point. Just expand what you're thinking
expand
about.
Your search.
But you have to be comfortable with your neighborhood. It's just not a matter of finding the house and being closer to things. Is it a neighborhood you want to live in?
Right.
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, Bonnie's back. Okay, let's see how that's going to work now. Bonnie, you're on the air. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, Ann.
Yep.
I just wanted to make a comment that we sold our house. I lived in Marion Village for 20 years, mm-hmm. and we sold our house and were able to pay cash for a home in North Linden, and we love it. It's the best-kept secret right off of Oakland Park, and you can bike to Clintonville. Walk to places near the Oakland Nursery, but it is a wonderful neighborhood and a friendly neighbor. We have a garage and a driveway and double the land.
Woohoo!
Right. That's awesome.
We ran into a lot of crime in Marion Village. We had 2 cars stolen, even things stolen the night before we moved. And we're kind of glad to get out of Central City. The affordability of Linden is amazing.
That's awesome. Yeah, she's right. I think those have some great locational attributes in that neighborhood. You can get a really nice house for an affordable price. I think North Linden is going to become one of those desirable neighborhoods.
Yeah. They've got a lot of character. They've got some good bones.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Bonnie, thanks a lot for hanging in there with us. We will continue our conversation about the real estate market in Central Ohio with my guests. You just heard from Rob Vogt, real estate analyst at Vogt Strategic Insights, and also with us, Todd Helpbringer. He is president at Helpbringer Mortgage Services. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking Central Ohio real estate this hour. Still with us, real estate analyst at Vogt Strategic Insights, Rob Vogt, and also president of Helpbringer Mortgage Services, Todd Helpbringer. Questions, comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I read that one real estate company is holding seminars for seniors who are looking to downsize. So this is a thing now. I mean, they're trying to figure out how to get them out. There must be a lot of them doing it, or they wouldn't be doing seminars on it. And this is a deal.
A lot of them have that community, 55 and older community, where their condos. And I mean, they're nice ranch-style condos. Yeah, and
there's a lot of those springing up all over the place.
Nicely done and have all their amenities they need right there.
Yeah.
Now, Ann, could you move out of your house right now with all the stuff you have?
She's not 55 yet.
Yeah.
She couldn't get in there.
Isn't that funny? Aren't they just jokers? And they know what they're talking about when it comes to real estate and mortgages, strangely. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Doug in Old Oaks. Where is that? Where is that, Doug?
Old Oaks is near Children's Hospital. It's a historic district.
Yeah.
It's just south of Old Town and east of Children's.
Beautiful
it's
housing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's where all the Germans from German Village moved to in the 1890s. Well, the Schmidts lived there, the Schottensteins lived there. I mean, Jack Nicklaus was actually brought up there. So
wow.
It's a neat little area.
Yeah.
I called because I'm really excited. Some new neighbors, my friends Brandon and Joe, bought a house on Linwood, and they're going to be actually getting taped for the DIY Network's first-time flippers. So they're going to be showcasing Central Ohio. Truly the urban core stock here. They're coming to do the filming next month.
Nice.
What kind of place are they flipping?
They're flipping, the neighborhood that we're in is super typical of what you're going to find in the urban core. It's a streetcar suburb. It's a Queen Anne-style wood frame home, two stories with an attic and a basement and a large front porch and a nice, actually, the neighborhood had garages in the back instead of carriage houses because the folks who were well-to-do at that point actually had a car and didn't have a horse and buggy. So it's a nice, probably about 2,000 square foot plus home.
Okay, well, that's kind of cool. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because the housing values all over the place, and including our neighborhood, are really kind of going up. So it was exciting to see that they were chosen for that.
You know, it's kind of interesting. Thank you, Doug, for that call. There's all these flipping shows on TV. Mm-hmm. It was really big back in the day during the bubble.
Yeah,
because things were cheap and plentiful and low interest rates. And
yeah, what I think is interesting is, you know, we have this whole new generation, the millennials again, who haven't experienced this, and to be able to see a house like this being transformed into a really desirable place to live is so important to us. And we've got a lot of housing stock there that's of marginal architectural value, and to show maybe not necessarily this house, but there are a lot of houses in Central Ohio that aren't particularly special architecturally, but if you can show that you can do something really special with it, it's going to, I think, just stimulate the interest in being able to take a house like that and convert it into a real show place.
That flipper flop show, just, it's amazing what they can do on there. I just stopped watching it. Doug, thanks a lot for that call.
It goes back to revitalizing the neighborhood.
Yeah. Right.
They start taking an older house, maybe it's beat up, and then bring new blood into it.
Is it Vesela in Columbus?
Hi, it's Vesela.
Okay, welcome to the show.
So I've been listening to the show, and it's a lot of information, but I find myself in a peculiar situation. I got a divorce, so my old house is still in my ex-husband and my name, and also the mortgage. But of course, the house is upside down, so we, try to get it refinance, get my name out of it, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. We're still working through that. So at the time, I had a little one. So I decided to get into a rent-to-own to get into the school district that I wanted. So my down payment is paid. I have closing money, like everything on that end. The house I love. I have the school district. But I'm finding, my credit is not the best. I have steady income. I have a good job. I'm working on it. I've got my credit report. I'm working on some things. But it's like I'm on my third year, which is my last year of that rent-to-own. I'm going to a NACA conference. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with that. But I was reading more information, and basically I disqualified because I currently have a home in my name. So I don't know if anybody else out there have any other suggestions or programs that I have not been able to find. Of course, the bank is not going to give me a mortgage, but I have all the other pieces other than the credit to get a mortgage. Hmm.
And the credit problem is because she already has a house in her name.
Yeah, I was wondering, because a lot of times we see that if in the divorce decree and separation agreement states that the responsibility of the mortgage is the other party, a lot of lenders won't count that debt against her. So I don't know if she's thought about that as an idea, but the credit is going to be key. Depending upon what level of credit score she is, that may hinder her being able to get financing. But she should be okay. If it says in the divorce decree it's going to be his responsibility, the lender won't count that against her. Mm. And he's shown the ability to pay it. In other words, the mortgage hasn't defaulted. If it's defaulted, that's a whole other story.
So maybe go back and look at the decree and see if...
Yes, you should go back there and see whose responsibility that house is.
Todd, are there any short-term strategies for somebody who has a poor credit score? I mean, how long does it take for the credit agencies to affect your score if you do something?
Yeah, great question. The bad thing is that they can affect your credit immediately. The downside is how much it takes to get back. And that's where we've found out it could be sometimes 6 months, depending upon how bad it is. And I will say another comment that has come up as often is that people go out there to that freecredit.com or whatever those. It is amazing to me that And we've talked to our representative of those repositories that the way they grade your credit score there versus when you get a mortgage is entirely different. So if someone goes online and gets a free credit score, it may be my credit score is 750. We pull it, it's 700. It's a different mechanism, which I think is so crazy to the, for the consumer, that why not have one standard grading of credit so that way they know where they stand, especially for something so important as a mortgage. So,
Vesela, good luck with that. Sounds like you're working in all the right directions. Let's see. Steve in New Albany, you're on the air. Hi, Steve.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me. Sure. I've got a house full of teenagers that have convinced themselves that they're going to be part of the tiny house revolution, and they're ready to pick up and move out west and make that happen.
Yeah.
So I've noticed, we have noticed, there's not a whole lot of tiny house activity around here. If you would, could you give us a summary of what's going on with the tiny house industry here in Central Ohio? And happy to take my answer off the air.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Is that because of zoning and things like that?
Yeah, I think a lot of communities have a minimum square footage requirement, and that precludes the tiny house movement. Now, I think this caller could have sent his kids to the micro units that are now beginning to shoot up and see if they like a 250 square foot unit to live in.
Apartment,
yeah. Right, just to try it out. I mean, it would be a lot easier to try it out at first rather than making a long-term commitment to hauling that little tiny house around.
And that would be the thing is that, you know, where would they get? I mean, a lot of them must pay cash for them because I've not heard of any financing.
Well, that's why they
Mobile.
It's mobile. You have to be able to.
I don't get it. Why is tiny house equivalent to mobile? It doesn't have to be, does it?
Well, they all seem to build them on wheels.
I know they do, but I don't get that. I mean, they do.
Well, I think that's to get around the zoning issue, that instead of having to meet the minimum square footage requirement of that community, they say this is a mobile unit. It isn't a permanent unit. So they can get around the zoning issues.
And a lot of them do it out in the country, too.
Yeah, right, where there is no zoning.
Right.
Yeah. And good luck to them.
Yeah. I think that's good recommendation.
Send them in the basement.
In George, a closet.
That's right.
George in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, George.
Hi, good morning. I just have a question. We've talked about the area south of Nationwide Children's Hospital. I live east of Nationwide Children's Hospital in Driving Park.
Okay.
And we're surrounded by five different local parks, not in my county stock. I just want to know what the outlook is for that area.
For the area east.
The Driving Park.
Driving Park area in Columbus. Mm-hmm. Rob Book?
Well, it's going to take some time, I think, before that revitalization efforts really affects Driving Park full. It is a great location. It's got modest size homes that could represent some good retirement housing for some folks. I think there's some perceptions of Driving Park that sometimes affects the way folks live there and folks who want to move to that neighborhood. But just like any revitalization, it's sort of a progression. And you know, you saw it in the Short North as it got into Wineland Park. You saw it on German Village going down into Marion Village. And I think the same thing is going to be true for Driving Park, where it's going to be influenced by not only the growth in Old Town East that starts to make its way south to Driving Park, but the Old Oaks District that was just talked about earlier, that revitalization will slowly progress into those neighborhoods. So it's going to take some time, I think, but eventually its location attributes will overcome a lot of those issues.
Thanks a lot, George, for that question. Sandra in London. Hi, Sandra.
Hi, Anne.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you. I wanted to make a comment. One of the callers talked about little-known neighborhoods. I live 15 minutes west of Columbus. They're private lake, Lake Choctaw in Madison County. The most peaceful, beautiful spot, and it seems as if so many people in the Columbus area know nothing about it. I wake up and go out on my deck, and I have a heron that will land on my boat dock many, many mornings. So just wanted to make people aware of a beautiful community.
Water in and of itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
A rare commodity in Central Ohio.
Right. And 15, she had 15 minutes away from Columbia.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's absolutely. A great, it is. It's a beautiful
I love
beautiful
it how people
site.
Are pitching their neighborhoods today.
Yeah.
It's kind of sweet.
Yeah.
So let's see. I'm turning on that score. Let's turn to James. Hi, James. You're on the air from Columbus.
Hey, how you doing, Ann?
Good.
Thank you for taking my call. I wanted your guests to comment on the neighborhood of Eastgate, what they think about Eastgate, where they think right there off Nelson Brown. And I'll take, I'll stay on the phone and take the, not by the radio, so I'll listen to the phone.
Okay. Eastgate.
I think that's that neighborhood east of Bexley. And again, it's one of those areas that not a lot of folks know about. It's got a good location. It's close to employment centers. It's got aging housing, again, which is sort of an issue. I think there's been a perception of crime in that neighborhood that might cause it not to enjoy the success of some of the surrounding neighborhoods. But again, it's one of those close-in neighborhoods that I think over time and folks begin to see revitalization efforts that could have a positive effect in the long-term outlook of that neighborhood. So I think location alone is one of those neighborhoods. It's a neighborhood that I think should enjoy some success in the future.
Okay. James, thanks a lot for that call. I want to turn now to Leanne in Clintonville. Interesting question, Leanne. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hi. Thank you. Yeah, I've got a duplex in Clintonville that I've had for about 12 years now, and I can't seem to get it refinanced. I don't want to tell you what my interest rate is, but a debt-to-income ratio, my credit's great, all that. And I always joke I've been paying this much for all these years, but they don't think I can pay less. But I'm forward to retirement, and since I can't refinance, I was wondering about condoing my duplex, which sounded weird at first, but I swear I've run across a couple in the real estate ads here of late that have condoed their duplex. And if that's possible, my son can buy the other half and I can pay off the rest of my mortgage. Is that possible? And if so, where do I start?
Well, I guess one thought would be on your mortgage, you say you can't refinance it. Have you gone back to the original servicer and asked them about a HARP, H-A-R-P, HARP loan, and see if they might be able to assist you with that? It depends on when you took the mortgage out.
What is that loan? What's the difference?
Basically, the lender of record that has the loan right now will refinance your loan back down to a lower interest rate. They do it internally themselves. And it's for people that might be underwater.
Okay.
Now, hers is debt to income. Maybe they can't help right until you know exactly what you're dealing with.
Well, Leanne made an interesting point, though. She says, why do they think I can't pay less? I've been making my payments. Why is that,
question.
Todd?
There's a new guideline out there called a QM, qualified mortgage, that we have to verify that you can afford this loan. And basically ratios, it depends on your loan to value. At one point, it can't exceed 50% of your income. Well, if it does, even though by paying less, they can't do it because the qualified mortgage kicks in and that we've set you up to fail. Because now again, I agree with your comment. If she can afford it now.
Well, she's got a history of it.
Right. So it might be something else that she might want to look at, a small community bank, someone that maybe doesn't sell their loans on the open market. They can maybe can assist her with that.
Okay.
Now, the condo issue, do you want to help with that?
Specifically, she's got to come up with condominium documents, and it has to be filed down at the courthouse and so on. So she needs to find
–
right. She's got to find an attorney who understands that process and understands how to go about filing as a condominium. And there has to be a deed restriction. And
what about just having her go in halvesies with her son and just have him buy –
well, there is the fee simple approach, too. She should look into – there's the condominium concept, and there's also – fee simple, where she divides the line. It's a lot split essentially, and that's another legal way to do it. But she has to get an attorney involved to do all that.
Okay. All right.
And plus, to give him deeds to that property, the lender that is currently in place has the whole thing.
Right. That's a good point.
Okay.
So he can go in there and buy it, but what's he buying again? Nothing.
Right.
Because it's still one parcel.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, Leanne, good luck. Good luck with that. Well, we're out of time. That's all there is to it. There's no other way to say it. Todd Helpbringer, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate your time today, as always.
Appreciate it.
Todd Helpbringer, he's president at Helpbringer Mortgage Services. And Rob Vogt, as always, thank you so much.
You're welcome, man.
Rob Vogt, real estate analyst at Vogt Strategic Insights. The name is not a coincidence. It's your company. Thanks to everybody for all your great calls, as usual. And thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.